Welcome to the Digital Tattoo Podcast. We have a very exciting show today with a particularly special guest.
Who is the president of UBC?
Santa Ono.
Santa Ono. It's Santa.
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 Yeah, his name is Santa Ono.
Yeah,
Santa Ono. Santa Ono.
I sat down with the president of UBC, Professor Santa Ono, and discussed everything social media. For those who aren't familiar, UBC's president has sent over 9,000 tweets in the last year, posted over 3,000 times to Instagram, done daily video blogs for YouTube, participated in Reddit AMAs and Facebook live streams. He's well known and somewhat beloved among students for his active participation in social media.
What kind of social media is he most active on?
I've actually saw him do a Reddit AMA, so that's all that stands for Ask Me Anything. That and probably Facebook is the two platforms that I've seen him on.
I see him on Instagram a lot, yeah. I follow him on there.
Probably Twitter. Twitter is single.
I'll say Instagram. He's got 8,000 followers on Instagram.
Him on Instagram? Yeah, but he did not follow me back, so after a while I followed him.
Instagram, first and foremost, like he's big, he posts like maybe like 5 or 6 times a day, like it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I've seen him on Facebook. I saw him a video of him doing a crowd surf at the opening football game.
Yeah, everything else everyone else has said, but he's also pretty active on Twitter, I'm pretty sure. I think I've seen a tweet or two from Santa Ono on there, and then LinkedIn too, he shares some pretty important articles.
And the amazing thing is that all this social media use doesn't come across as vapid or commercial. Everyone I spoke with agreed that his use of social media humanizes him. This is real engagement from a real person. After meeting with President Ono, I can assure you that this isn't a false pretense that he puts up just for social media. The guy is really that honest, personable, and likable. He's using social media as an extension of his personality, and it's making him better at his job. So to find out the how, what, when, why, and where's of Professor Ono's social media use, here's our full interview. Ready to roll?
Ready to roll.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Professor Ono, for meeting with us today for the Digital Tattoo Podcast.
It's my pleasure.
So I just want to go back in time a little bit to last year. When you were announced as the president of the university, I was able to look at sort of the accolades on the piece of paper and the press release and see sort of all your accomplishments. But through social media, I was able to dive a little bit deeper into the way that you interacted with students, the way students interacted with you, and I got this really rich sense of who you were before you came here. So as a president who's embraced social media, I'm really interested to know about the first time you ever used social media.
Well, you know, I actually, prior to being in Cincinnati, was in Atlanta, Georgia, at Emory University in Atlanta, and I was not a digital native. I'm not a digital native at all, and I barely knew how to use my cell phone. So I remember there were students at that university that really wanted to communicate with me using a cell phone, and one of them asked for my cell phone number. I thought he was going to actually just give me a call, but he actually texted me, and that was the very first time I even received or sent a text. I had no idea how to respond on that phone. It was not an iPhone at that time. It was something called a Trio, and I had to be educated by students about what social media was. And just before leaving Emory University in Atlanta, they convinced me to start using something called Facebook. And that was when I started. I remember some of the initial pictures of events on campus. And that's how I started dabbling in social media on Facebook. When I moved to the University of Cincinnati, first as provost and then as president, the communications department actually said that this is something that you really should consider using. There weren't many presidents or provosts that were on social media. They felt that I had a relatively youthful demeanor and encouraged me to think about communicating with not only students but also faculty and staff and alumni using social media. And they told me about something called Twitter. And so they introduced me to this platform called Hootsuite, which is actually here in Vancouver. And I started using Twitter. And I think everything is preserved forever on Twitter, and you can probably see my very first tweet. And so that's how it all started, that first students said, you got to communicate to us through social media. And then the communication department itself said that you should consider social media. And I've become a little bit of a monster on social media, not only on Facebook, but also on Twitter and Instagram. And the only thing that I don't use right now is Snapchat.
And I've gotten some feedback. I went around and I talked to some students last week about your use of social media, and it was overwhelmingly positive. Everybody loved that you're on it. But a lot of students said, why isn't Ono on Snapchat? Can you get Ono on Snapchat? Have you considered using Snapchat?
And the answer is that I have a daughter that's about your age, who's a university student in Ohio, and she forbade me for being on Snapchat. She said that there's a little bit of risk involved because people send photographs and they disappear and things like that. And so she was a little bit worried about people sending me pictures that I probably wouldn't want to be associated with. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it was because of my daughter.
Fair enough, yeah. So when you first started using social media and the students recommended it and then your communications team recommended it, were you hesitant at first? Were there some stumbling steps as you began to sort of begin using it?
Absolutely. You know, over the years, I've made mistakes, and I'm actually writing a book that's going to be published by Johns Hopkins University Press about the university presidency in the digital age, and really talks about some of the missteps and how you're actually exposed in a way if you are on social media as opposed to not being on social media. As you know, my predecessor, Stephen Toop, was adamantly against social media. He does not like Twitter at all, and he's quite well known for that. And so I'm really 180 degrees from him. But he's right that it's limited what you actually can articulate in 140 characters, even though there's a longer form of Twitter now. And so there are pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And that's all spelled out in the book, but we can talk a little bit more about it later in this podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I've got a quote here from Stephen Toop. He said, one of the worst things that's been created in my lifetime, and that's about Twitter, he said that it encourages thoughtless, reactive modes of communication, which you've sort of addressed, but it does open up other modes of communications that are simply unable to, a person in your position would be inaccessible otherwise, unless it was for these kind of platforms.
Well, I think Stephen, I love Stephen, he's a great president, he's really did a lot for UBC, and he's going to do a great job at Cambridge as well, but it might simply be that Stephen doesn't know how one can use social media. You know, you can tweet videos with much longer content, and you know that I do that. And you can link it to blogs, which are very extensive, which I write. So I think that his view is really based upon a sense that you're limited to 140 characters. You really aren't. Certainly Facebook provides different functionalities as well.
So let's talk a little bit about your social media process. Do you block off time each day to go on social media?
Well, if you look at my calendar, it's pretty carefully scheduled. And so, as you know, for today, I have 30-minute blocks, and this is one of those 30-minute blocks. But I also travel quite a bit. I've been to Rwanda and to Ottawa recently just in the past week. And so there's a lot of actually waiting at airports where there's a layover. And of course, there's the morning and there's the evening after everything is done, where I have some time to actually tweet or post something. So they're not actually dedicated periods of time that are blocked off. I just take advantage of time that I have here and there.
Mm. And how much time? Have you ever tried to quantify how much time you spend a day or a week on social media?
Somebody actually did a study on that. There was actually a course at University of Cincinnati where they analyzed all of my tweets over a period of time, looked at its distribution and what my favorite sports teams were and things like that. And I think that on average, I tweet about a dozen times a day. And some of them are incredibly fast because they're just retweets. Mm-hmm. Other ones are a little bit more involved involving a zany video or something like that. So it really depends upon it. But it's not that much time at all, really.
Yeah. So I've got another student question here. Torjo, he's a first-year economics student here at UBC, and he follows you on Instagram. He asks, why don't you hire someone to do all your social media for you?
Because then it wouldn't be me. And I think one of the most important things is that students and faculty and staff and alumni can tell whether it's an institutional account or whether it's really me. And, you know, one of my zaniest, most recent posts was of a video that I took on YouTube. I also have a YouTube channel of the digital dance. And I was just blown away because I thought nobody would want to watch it. But in 2 days, over 2,000 people had viewed it. And so it's by far the most viral video. And it was just something I did when I was waiting for food to arrive. And so that's so, you know, unique and so zany that people realize that must be him. And I think it also, in a way, makes me more human. A lot of presidents and vice chancellors or chancellors are just static images of what might be on a website or somebody that you see once or twice during your career at Imagine Day or when you graduate. And this is a way that on a regular basis people can really get a glimpse of what am I doing and what am I really like, and the guy is actually just a little bit zany. And if that brings me closer to students, faculty, and staff, then I think that's an accomplishment, because my job is to really understand the pulse of the campus, to be accessible so people can actually tell me about what we're doing well and what we can do better. And the more human I can be, I think the more people are comfortable telling me about their views. And so I think that's the way, that's the reason why I think it's important for it to be really me and not to be somebody who is hired.
Mm-hmm. And so you do it all yourself then?
I do it all myself.
Okay.
I mean, I do have somebody in the office who's head of communications that helps me structure things. And if I'm actually on a long-haul flight and something has to go out urgently, he will do it on my behalf. Mm-hmm. But 99% of the time, it's me.
Okay. So when you left behind your position at the University of Cincinnati and you came to UBC, you also left behind your social media accounts. And a lot of people might not know that. You had a very significant following there, and you kind of had to start fresh in two different ways. It was almost like this digital Santa Ono began anew. What was that like?
Well, you know, it's. I think I'm one of the few people that actually has lived that transition. And so at the very peak in Cincinnati, that Twitter address, which was at PREZONO, had 77,000 followers. And it wasn't just University of Cincinnati people. There were other individuals at other universities. There were people just interested in higher ed, people who were interested because I played a cello. And so it's quite a diverse audience. And so I actually continued to tweet from that address for some period of time. But eventually, I felt the right thing to do was to leave that behind because, you know, when there's a new president coming on board, you have to give them their opportunity to develop their own persona. And you sort of get in the way if you're still tweeting from that account. And so my last tweet that will be up there forever is, I don't remember exactly what I said, but was really sort of a thank you to that community for my 6 years there and how much it meant to me. And I think I said something like, University of Cincinnati or UC will be the hottest college in America for me for the rest of my life, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's my way of saying goodbye. And then I created my own new address here at UBC, and I think it's the right thing to do. Some people actually just started to follow me on this site, but I think it's really out of respect for UC and for the fact that I'm interacting with a different group of people here. I think it's appropriate to start out with a new address here. And it's gone really well, if you think about it. I was at UC for 6 years. And so you can do the math, 77,000. I think some people have left that, so there might be 73,000 now.
I think it's about that, yeah.
That now, after a little bit over a year, we're at 15,000 something. Mm-hmm. And so the number of followers per year here at UBC has really kept pace with what happened at UC.
I'd be kind of remiss not to mention this. I know you're going to refute this comparison, but just thinking about another tweeting president in the United States who doesn't use the handle that of the president of the United States, Donald Trump has chosen to keep his own handle. I couldn't see more different uses of social media between you and him. But could you comment a little bit on his use of Twitter and how your strategy might kind of differ from his?
Well, I think it's most people who actually follow both of our accounts would probably acknowledge that I'm quite a bit more discreet in what I say, how I say it, and what I don't use social media for. And you know, Trump is really unfiltered, mm-hmm. and he will tweet often early in the morning when he's very upset or irate about something. I will really think two or three times before I actually will send out a tweet, unless it's a very benign tweet, I don't think very much about those, but I do take a lot of time thinking about what I say, because I know lots of people are watching. And sometimes even with that level of discretion, you'll make a mistake and you'll say something that you don't intend or can be viewed in a certain perspective you might not anticipate. And then I have to correct that. You know, earlier this year, I retweeted something something called the Chronicle of Higher Education, an article about the numbers of PhDs in the humanities. And all I had done was to retweet that. But sometimes that's viewed as an endorsement. And it was misperceived by some that I felt there were too many PhDs in the humanities. Nothing could be further from the truth. I actually feel that the humanities and social sciences are incredibly important for UBC. And I actually go around the world advocating for the importance of the liberal arts. And so even just inadvertently tweeting something can be misperceived. So you have to be really careful with what you do or what you say or what you retweet, and be mindful of that. Because the last thing you want to do is to, inadvertently cause a segment of your followers to feel that they're not appreciated or you don't appreciate what they do. And so, and that I think that Trump doesn't have that filter.
So you kind of hit on it a little bit there, but what kind of advice would you have for students then when they're sort of going out into the world and beginning to create their professional personas and they're encouraged to use social media? What would you say to them?
Well, I think that they have to be cognizant of the different kinds of positions that are out there in the real world. I think that prior to Trump, he really has totally rewritten the rules of what a leader would typically do on social media. But I think that if you're a CEO of a bank or of a large Fortune 500 company, you are actually quite regulated in what you can do. They have much fewer levels of freedom or degrees of freedom than I have on social media. So to answer your question, if you're a graduate of UBC, one of the first things you have to do is really assess what is permissible, what might land you in hot water in terms of what you do. And that should be at least a reference point in what you do. Because the last thing you want to do as a new graduate is to do something that's going to get you in hot water. But there are also frontiers in communication. And so I don't think that new graduates or graduates from long ago should feel completely ring-fenced by what's happened in the past. That all of us should have a pioneering spirit and should, in a methodical way, be able to have conversations with our superiors to ask, is this something that would be permissible? Would you be okay with that? And, you know, I've had conversations even with the search committee for the presidency of UBC when I was actually being interviewed, and there were extensive interviews. Part of the conversations were about my use of social media and my philosophies about that. And I think since it was pretty widely known that I use social media quite a bit, they were pretty cognizant of what I do. Mm-hmm. And they probably were pretty cognizant of the fact that I would tweet out song lyrics and pictures of donuts and things like that. And they were fine with that. Mm-hmm. But the important thing was that they chose me with their eyes wide open, knowing that that was the kind of president they were getting.
During your time at the University of Cincinnati, you used social media really well to navigate a few crisis situations that happened there. I think particularly you used it effectively to communicate to an audience both inside and outside of the university. Could you speak a little bit about the power of social media to put a message out there?
You know, when you have a large following, and that's certainly true for Trump, it's a very effective communications tool. And one thing is true, that you can choose how your message goes out. If you actually work through traditional media, they will interpret what you say or choose the headline, and you don't have control of that. So I do understand that aspect of what Trump is trying to do, because he controls what the message is. And there's a power to that. In a crisis situation, there are many different points of view of what's really going on. And in some cases, it's powerful to be able to say exactly what you want to say. The other thing that's powerful about social media is you have control of when it goes out. If you're being interviewed by TV or newspaper, they may or may not run what you say, or they might run a clip of what you say, and it's going to come out when it comes out. If there is a situation, for example, a shooter on campus, or there's some kind of threat to the institution, then social media is incredibly effective because you can get the message out instantaneously, and it says exactly what you want to say.
So when you were at University of Cincinnati, you also created a very viral hashtag, which you mentioned earlier, hottest college in America. So you've been at UBC for a year now. I've been waiting patiently. Where's the hashtag? When are we going to get our viral hashtag?
Well, I started out, I don't know if you remember, by trying to crowdsource and choose a hashtag that would resonate with students here. And I don't know if you remember that.
I don't know.
But if you go back, you'll see on Twitter that I tried to do that. And there were all kinds of suggestions. Somebody said, well, it's Canada, so it's not very hot up here, so maybe it should be the coolest college in Canada, to which some individuals on social media said, you can't call UBC a college because college has a different connotation as it does in the States. So, and then coolest university in Canada didn't have the same kind of a ring. And so through sort of a process, we narrowed down on something that is actually on a T-shirt that I give out, which is hashtag UBC2MS. But it really didn't get the kind of reaction. It doesn't have the buzz that mm-hmm. hottest college in America does. So I haven't found the right one. And if those listening to this podcast have any suggestions, I welcome them to tweet to me any suggestions. There were a number of other ones that were suggested, for example, involving Thunderbirds, but then we have the Heat and the Thunderbirds. And right. so choosing the right one for the entire university, is pretty important. I think in an American university, there's a lot more convergence on the team or the mascot than is the case in the Canadian university. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were one of the possibilities involved Thunderbirds, and in addition to the fact that there's the Heat and the Thunderbirds, there were some people who are just focused on the academics who said, I'm not a Thunderbird. Whereas if you're at USC, it's a Trojan, or if you're in Michigan, it's a Wolverine, or in Cincinnati, it's a Bearcat. There's a little bit more convergence on identity there. And so I really need everybody's help. And so if anybody can help me get a good hashtag, I'll try it out.
Awesome. So I've got a couple more student questions here. This one's from Anastasia. She's a third-year sociology and economics student, and she used to follow you on Instagram. She asks, why didn't you follow me back?
Oh, actually, I don't follow everybody that follows me.
Okay.
I suppose I could. but it's got nothing to do with what she did or did not do or what she posted. So I hope she didn't take it personally. I just don't follow everyone that follows me.
Okay, fair enough. Aaron, a second-year kinesiology student, really liked your Reddit AMA, and he thought that was a terrific way for students to feel comfortable asking you questions that otherwise they wouldn't be able to ask. He was wondering if you're going to do any more Reddit AMAs.
Oh, I'm planning on doing more of those, and I think I surprised people because there were so many questions, and I think there was a assumption that I would just answer some of them, but I tried to be pretty comprehensive in answering most of the questions. Mm-hmm. And so I'm happy to do that. I think it's part of my responsibility to be accountable.
Okay, and my last question. So social media seems to be a two-way street. You get a lot out of it in being able to communicate your message towards students, but you also seem very receptive to students communicating that message back to you. Is that the most important thing about social media, that it is a dialogue between two people?
That's one of the most powerful aspects of it. If you publish something, as I do often in op-eds in the Globe and Mail, or if there's an interview of me that's on the Rick Mercer show, those things are great because a lot of people see them, but there's no way that people can actually communicate with me. But on social media, there are two ways to communicate with me. One is by directly responding to something that I tweet, and people do that. And sometimes it's not all that complimentary, which is okay because I know when people don't agree or when they're not happy with something that we've done. That's fine. I learned from that. But there are also a lot of people that will direct message me. And they direct message me about things that are very sensitive. I've had individuals that are very depressed that direct message me and say, where can I go? What kind of support is there at the university for me? And I'm happy that they feel comfortable messaging me and communicating with me about that and that I can actually help them. And there are other individuals that will direct message me about our sustainability efforts or what's happening with First Nations. And I think that's really one of the best aspects of social media is that people can communicate directly with me.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us today and talking to us about social media. All the students I spoke with were totally in favor of you using it, continuing to use it, loved your engagement through it.
And my only request is for those of you who are listening to this podcast, if you don't follow me, I hope that you will. And in this sort of blatant advertisement, my address on Twitter is at UBCPrez, P-R-E-Z. And I'd be thrilled. It's the same handle for Instagram as well. I'd be thrilled for more students and faculty and staff at UBC and alumni to connect with me through social media.
And we'll work on that hashtag, too. We got to get that.
That'd be fantastic.
Okay. Thanks again, Santa.
All the best.
A special thanks this week to Julie Mitchell, Alex Kuskowski, Cindy Underhill, Rob Kim, and Kathleen Schaefer. They're the strategic leads behind the Digital Tattoo Project who help focus our themes each week and secure guests for the show. Of course, a huge thanks to Professor Santa Ono and all the students who talked to me about social media. You can visit us at digitaltattoo.ubc.ca or find us on Twitter at DTATUBC and Facebook at Digital Tattoo. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or tune back into CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver every other Friday at 7 p.m. for a new episode. This episode features music by Lee Rosevere. Thanks for listening.